smartest man alive!
You're gonna die, clown!
And that's what I call a quality A tool.
I'm Scuba Sam, Scuba Steve's father.
We eat the pig and then together we burn!
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another very special episode of the Billy Gilmore Podcast, the podcast for the discerning Adam Sandler fan, the podcast for the fan of the Sandman. I am your host, Wilson Smith, and joining me as always are...
Hi, this is Chris Giles.
And Austin Culp.
And we're so excited to be with you, as we always are. This is, you know, every episode, as I think I say every time, every episode is a very special episode, but this one's particularly very special, because we are here to discuss Adam Sandler's 2014 joint Blended. This one's going to be an interesting one, I think. We got some stuff to talk about. But before we do that, before we jump in, you know, we like to talk about Adam Sandler in the news. We like to talk about what's been going on with him since we last recorded. Who knows when you're listening to this? Maybe you're listening to this months or years after we recorded it, in which case I hope things are much, much better in your timeline than they are in ours. But we are still dead, you know, smack in the middle of this global pandemic that's wreaking havoc on everyone and everything. As far as we know, Sandler and all the Sandler squad is staying safe. But that means that there hasn't been a ton of news since we last recorded during our Grown Ups 2 episode. We did hear that QB Halloween went in for some reshoots, which is sort of interesting considering the state of production these days. I'm sure that ensuring that set was a challenge, but hopefully they took all the necessary precautions. I'm sure they did, or else they wouldn't have been allowed to film. So there's that. Lauren Lapkus, who makes an appearance in tonight's film, as well as we discussed her a few episodes ago, because she's the titular character in the most recent Happy Madison joint, The Wrong Missy. She gave an interview about that where she was talking about how fun it was to work on that movie and the scene where she had to scream and curse at Adam Sandler's children. She was talking about how Sandler was there on the day and was really encouraging her to just go for it. And just, really let him have it. And she, you know, that made her feel a little bit better because, you know, she, in her words, she was like, I respect this guy. I look up to him. So it was like, oh, that's cool. So that was a fun little news story. And as we mentioned during that episode, definitely recommend at least one viewing of The Wrong Missy, if for no other reason than Lapkus's performance, because it is, I mean, honestly, if there's any sort of awards ceremony this year, just fucking give it to Lapkus. Give it all to Lapkus.
And I mean, like, the likelihood that a lot of people have watched it is very likely. It's number, Netflix came out with their top 10 films of all time, and number 5, I think, was Murder Mystery, and number 8 is The Wrong Missy.
Yeah, it's like sandwiching the Irishman. It's like the Irishman between these two things.
Or like, the way that I would frame it too, another recent Netflix movie that, you know, got a decent amount of attention was Eurovision with Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams, which I watched and enjoyed. And I think kind of like the immediate reaction to that movie was like, oh yeah, this is good, this is fine. But wow, Rachel McAdams really carries this thing. Wow, Rachel is fantastic. Totally agree. That's often the case with my wife, Rachel. But the same conversation should have been occurring with The Wrong Missy and Lauren Lapkus. I think there's probably a general dismissiveness of that movie from the highfalutin film Twitter elites who probably wouldn't give that the time of day. But Lapkus is so good in it. She's so funny. And the movie itself is breezy and fun and silly. Like, it's it will hopefully cure your COVID woes, as it were. So, yeah.
That's kind of, Wrong Missy is honestly kind of a, and I'll say anecdotally, a lot of the film, the snobby film Twitter people love them, but you know, snobby film Twitter people were kinder to The Wrong Missy than they are to a lot of these Sandler movies. And I think that the quarantine factor of it all has a lot to do with it. And like, this has always been the case, but now more so than ever. It's like, if I had driven to a theater to see The Wrong Missy and paid money for a ticket and sat down with popcorn and had to be around other people and everything, I would have been like, even before COVID, you know, being around other people, it just was like, oh, this was like, how dare they fob this off on us as like, you know, as like accessible entertainment. Like, this is like, this script is defective. Like, it doesn't, and then like watching it at home, I was just like, this is fine. This is funny. It's entertaining. It's charming. David Spade has a weird hairpiece.
He does.
I mean, I guess looking at that top 10, it's pretty action heavy. But these are the only two comedies in the whole thing. Unless you consider The Irishman to be a comedy, which it is funny. But
yeah, it's kind of surprising that Sandler doesn't have more on there, considering how much they talk him up as like, you know, such a big... And I was also, honestly, I mean, this is... We don't need to delve too much further into this, but I was surprised to see Extraction at number one, because I liked that movie quite a bit, but it's weird that that movie's been out for like 4 months or three months. So it's weird that that movie, and I feel like after it, the first couple of weeks that it was out, I haven't heard anyone talking about it since. So I'm just like, who's continuing to watch it? Who's going to like, I don't know.
I'd be willing to bet that Hubie Halloween, when it does eventually drop, will just break Netflix. That's what I'm counting on.
Yeah. And Netflix is gonna be down for a day because everyone's gonna try and access it at the same time to watch Hubie Halloween.
Especially if it's really family friendly, because I mean, I guess murder mystery, you could probably have a kid watch it, but it's not like super kid friendly. But if Hubie Halloween like really appeals to kids and adults, I could see it being huge.
For sure.
Yeah, four quadrants.
I have a question for both of you to kick off Blended. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this movie kind of like a Billy Gilmore podcast origin story in a way?
So yes. So now having gotten past the Sandler news that I know of, this is I was talking to Austin before we started recording, and it is interesting because, you know, we talked about, you know, it's like we've had our Jack and Jill episode where we talked about why that was sort of an important movie for the podcast. And then we just came off of our Grown Ups 2 episode, which was just a total blast and, you know, just an amazing sort of like, you know, reminding us of why we do this show, you know, all this, you know, it's such a great experience to have everybody on there. But Grown Ups 2 was another one that we discussed on that episode that was sort of formative as far as like our present day adult ideas about Adam Sandler and his career. And Blended, you wouldn't think it based on like, it doesn't have that weird Baroque quality that Grown Ups 2 and Jack and Jill have, but Blended actually does have sort of an outsized place in my personal sort of, you know, Sandler cosmos, because so this film was released in 2014, and in 2014, you know, I was living here in Austin. And I was working for partially unpaid. You get paid in screening invitations and like DVDs and Blu-rays. But my friend who has a website, Synapse, go check it out. It's great. They get press invites to, back when movies played in these things called theaters, you would get an invite and you would go see a movie in a theater with a bunch of other people. Sitting like in close proximity to you for hours at a time. And
you would hear them laugh. That was like the thing. That was like the special thing for these movies.
Yes, exactly. It was a real amazing, again, we don't know what timeline you're listening to this in, but let's just presume we have to explain the concept of movie theaters to you. So yeah, you hear people laugh, you hear people munching on their popcorn and coughing without covering their mouths. It was a disaster. But Austin, I still to this day, but even more so back then, would get these emails basically saying like, these are the opportunities we have to review things. Like if anyone wants them, like first come, first served.
Yeah.
Me and all the other writers. And when Blended came up, I don't know exactly why I agreed to it, because the site wasn't listing that as one we needed to cover. I mean, the site is kind of geared towards, like, most people who read film sites, you know, more the geekier, you know, less family movie, more like, you know, just geekier, a little bit more mature stuff. And I was square in the period. I was squarely in the period of, at that point, it was like right at the tail end of my period of being too good for Adam Sandler.
Right.
And so I don't remember why. Maybe I just thought it would be funny. I mean, funny in a, like, we can go like laugh at like how lazy Adam Sandler's being or whatever thing. But I accepted that gig and I got a plus one. My friend Austin, I was like, oh, Austin is the one person I know. This is before I knew Brian Connolly. I was like, Austin's the one person I know our age who is still an unabashed, like, genuine diehard Sandler fan. And because the previous year, Grown Ups 2 had come out and Austin had told me and everyone else, like, oh, it's like American Graffiti. It's actually really funny. It's like Days of Confused. We went to see it at just a multiplex. It wasn't like the Draft House or anything. It was the Regal Westgate, if I'm not mistaken. I think so.
Either there or the Metropolitan, but nobody knows what we're talking about.
That's right, yes.
It's not at a Regal, which is probably not going to be around if you listen to this in a year or so.
But we went to this Regal and we saw this movie, and so we'll get into my opinion of the film then and my opinion of the film now, you know, during the synopsis and everything. But something that does stand out to me about that, and Austin, I wonder if you, because I don't know how often we've talked about this. I don't know if you how well you remember this, but do you remember the person outside taking the comments from the audience?
Yeah.
You remember that lady talking about Drew Barrymore?
I do. I think I remember it mostly through your stories of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was like. Because we went to a sold out, like, it was a sold out, like, free show. It was packed. We were sitting, like, middle of the aisle. This is a long movie. I'm sure I got, like, a soda. So I'm sure, like, at the end of this movie, I was like, I got to take a piss. And right. I think I probably bolted, and you're probably there waiting as people are exiting, giving their three-second reviews.
As you're telling the story, I now know it was the Regal Westgate, because I know exactly where the theater was in relationship to those bathrooms. So you just ran out to the bathroom, and I'm just, like, waiting for you, and the guy is standing there with his clipboard interviewing the audience. And so there was like a row for critics, which for whatever reason I was designated as such. There's a row for critics, but everyone else there was like general audience, like just like families, people who like got these tickets online or through a promotion with like a radio station.
Go Fobbers.
This woman with her two young children, probably like, you know, 5 or 6 years old. There's a man with a clipboard who was taking down audience reactions to send back eventually to the studio, because this was like a week before it came out in theaters. And this woman said, and I remember just being very struck by this. She was just like, he was like, what did you think of the movie? And she was just like, oh, I loved it. Do you know it's been 10 years since Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore were in a movie together? They need to do more movies together. Mm-hmm. And I was just so struck by the fact that this woman was a Adam Sandler fan to the point where she could date when 50 First Dates had come out, knew that this was a solid decade later, and she had been spending those 10 years thinking about, when are Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore going to get back together in a movie? And so the reasons for making this movie were seemingly on paper very sound. There was a desire out there for more Sandler Barrymore stuff. And who could blame them?
And I mean, by all accounts from Barrymore's book, that's kind of become a joke between the two of them as well. Obviously, they're very successful, busy people, you know, active professional and personal lives, but every now and again, whenever, according to Drew, whenever they run into each other at a party, or at some sort of, you know, Hollywood schmoozy event, they, you know, sort of say hi to each other and talk off the side and be like, okay, so what's the next one going to be? And for this one, it was like, oh, well, we've done two, or like, we fall in love, like we should do, like we both have kids now. It's been what, nearly, it's been like 15 years since The Wedding Singer, almost 20. Like, what if we did one where we have families, I think was the initial spark of it. And then, you know, like, oh, it turned into a, just like 51st Dates turned into a vacation to Hawaii. Let's turn this one into a vacation to Africa. Why not? But, you know, that's fine. I sadly missed this one in theaters. I think we were still firmly in the, like, me just kind of being checked out of Sandler's career at this point. But eventually, once I got back on the wavelength, this one became kind of like a very quick and reliable favorite. And like, we'll get into the specifics, but there's a leisurely comfort to this movie that I find very charming. Like, even on just the poster and like the advertisements, it, like, it says like Sandler, Barrymore, blended, like not even first names, just last names, like the way Schwarzenegger used to do, like like that's how. And, you know, and of course the movie just starts with them right in the middle of their bad day. Like, the movie doesn't need to prove their chemistry anymore, I guess, because it already know, like, it's already a proven commodity by this point, and dives into it and just has fun with them bickering and you know, and this is one I was very excited to do. It's no one's maybe favorite, but we'll, with the exception of your mother's.
You are sorely mistaken, my friend. That's the other point that we have to mention, diving into the movie proper, is that, you know, I think, and this is maybe a reason why this movie has stuck out to me more so, you know, and this movie kind of, I think in a way, it starts to melt the ice around my, like, Sandler freeze out, my sort of like disappointment with him, is that my mother, I don't know how, because she didn't see it in I don't believe she saw it in the theater. Maybe she did, but at some point she acquires the Blu-ray of Blended.
Yeah.
Like, soon after it comes out, and she, I start, when I call her, in, you know, the back half of 2014, she starts to tell me, she's like, she just will ask me, she's just like, you know, Wilson, have you seen this movie Blended? And I was like, oh yeah, Austin and I saw that in theaters, it was real dumb. And she was like, oh, I love it, it's just, I it's just my favorite. And I was like, your favorite Adam Sandler? And she was just like, I don't know, it just might be my favorite movie. And it was like, for a while, I'd like clown on her a little bit for saying that. But basically now, every time I go home to visit her, I end up watching Blended, which is, you know, and there's no problem. It's a rewatchable movie, but it's just like, you know, it's like, I think in addition to, because this would have been around the same, you know, I started working at Vulcan in 2015. Mm-hmm. So less than a year after this movie came out. So I think that's definitely sort of the, like, that's sort of the trajectory. That's sort of like, as it starts to ramp back up into being a fan of Adam Sandler, where I'm just like, you know, like, oh, I've been sort of softened up a little bit by my mom, you know, loving Blended, and me just deciding, like, not a sociopath, being like, oh, of course, like, let her have this. Like, if it brings her this much joy, I'm not going to say anything negative about it. And then I meet Brian Connolly, and he's just like, Blended, that movie's good. I'm like, oh yeah, my mom loves Blended. And he's like, you know what else is good? Jack and Jill. I'm like, what? So this one, like we said, this one is 2014. This one is Frank Caracci. Frank Caracci's back in the saddle for this one. So yeah, so Blended, 2014, Frank Caracci, you know, so we got Caracci back in the saddle. Let's see, Caracci did Wedding Singer, he did Waterboy, he did, what's the most recent one in our, Click? Was Click the last one that he did?
He didn't do, oh, I was going to say, did he do
he did Click was the last Sandler. Then after that, he did Zookeeper and Here Comes the Boom. So he's still in the Happy Madison family, but the last Sandler was Click.
That's right. I knew he'd done. Yeah, Zookeeper. That's right. Boy. Austin, you were mentioning like, what will we do when we reach the end of Sandler's filmography, like for this podcast, like what would our episodes be, or would we keep going? And it's like, but yeah, like we might just jump into like, we might just do like, you know, the Zookeeper and Paul Blart and like the Spade movies and all those sorts of things.
I want to see in the context of the movie where the, like, him and the gorilla pull up to TGI Fridays and the gorilla goes, shut up.
Yeah. We do a whole episode on Zookeeper Loops, the YouTube channel where they just loop things from the Zookeeper trailer for 10 minutes. It's like a magic eye drawing. Like, the more you stare at it, the more like, it's like, you'll see the face of God. But yeah, so Frank Caracci back in Saddle for Blended. And of course, we have Drew Barrymore back again with Adam Sandler. You know, they have their great chemistry in The Wedding Singer and 50 First Dates. And those are two of Adam Sandler's biggest hits ever at that point. And so it's definitely like, you know, he had Jennifer Aniston 3 years before in Just Go With It, a movie that this greatly resembles in a lot of ways.
Yes.
You know, for those playing along at home, think about Just Go With It as like, Just Go With It as like Lost Highway, and Blended is like Mulholland Drive.
I'd really like to lay on the same track and see what their like arcs and their stories are, because it is very much so the same in terms of like, I feel like it takes a long time to get to Africa here. I feel like it took a long time to get to Hawaii there.
I didn't, my controller was like, I was too lazy. I didn't pick it up, but I was wondering like the second they get to Africa, maybe I've just seen this one more, but it felt like they got there a little bit sooner than like the stuff pre vacation wasn't as like wheel spinning.
Just go with it. Takes like almost a full hour for them to get off their asses. So yeah,
this is 30 minutes, like 30 minutes, almost on the dot.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So there you go. So I mean, it already has that going for it. I do kind of think that this movie is, and I know Austin, I think you at least disagree at least a little bit, but I do think this movie, to me, it does feel like a kind of, as Jennifer Aniston has a completely different energy than Drew Barrymore, and we've talked about that on the show before, and her, it's not a question of which actress is better, because they're both great in different ways. But I do think that this movie, Blended, is a little bit of a refinement of Just Go With It, which, like, Just Go With It is a movie that I also really enjoy. But, you know, that one has sort of the farcical plot that it doesn't really fully take advantage of. It sort of just, like, sits there, like, oh, boy, like, can you imagine the comic possibilities? Well, you have to keep imagining, because we're not really going to... We're not really going to exploit that too much. And Blended is more like, it's like, let's take the same, let's do what they clearly wanted to do with Just Go With It anyways, which was, let's just hang out. Like, let's just have, like, it's honestly not that far. I mean, it certainly has much more plot than Grown Ups 2, but as far as the moment-to-moment reality of the movie, it's like not that different than like the kind of episodic nature of a Grown Ups or Grown Ups 2, where it's just like, I don't know, they just go and things happen, and there's like a mild arc of their relationship. But
this feels like a Netflix movie before he started doing them, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And this one has, you know, this one's got all our favorite, you know, Sandler things, including, I mean, Just Go With It, this thing is it's a paid vacation for everybody, specifically to Lost City.
Right.
So yeah, Palace of the Lost City. I saw on like a menu it said the Palace, and I was like, okay, there's colonial overtones. But this is kind of transparently, this is a real resort that you can go to, and so it's kind of, again, transparently a commercial for that. But we're not there yet. Movie starts in the ladies' room. and we've got Drew Barrymore on the phone with her friend, who we find out later is played by Wendy McClendon Covey, I believe that's her name, from Reno 911. And I mean, that's such a dated reference at this point, but that is like That is the thing that I know her from.
Right. Yeah, me too. I mean, she's such a character. I mean, she's done more than just being a character actor, but she's such a, you recognize her. Bridesmaids.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes, of course. She's in Bridesmaids. That's the thing that most people would know her from.
Right, right.
But yeah, and so Drew Barrymore is talking about this awful, awful date that she is on, this blind date. She can't believe this date brought her to Hooters. and so we get, so first product placement entry, but we're back in the territory of like Happy Gilmore, where the product placement is like somehow folded into the movie's plot and characterization in a way that both serves as an image polish for the restaurant and a commercial, but also it's supposed to inform the characters' reactions to things and their behaviors. It's an interesting form of product placement that Sandler every so often will squeeze in there.
Absolutely. Like, I remember the first time I watched this proper, and once I kind of got over like my own sort of like almost like stupid, snarky, like kind of laughing at the movie, like, oh wow, more Hooters product placement. I kind of was stopped dead in my tracks. Like, wait a second though. Yeah, it's product placement, but it's product placement in this case with like a pretty like disarming emotional through line. Cause Sandler reveals that he met his wife here at Hooters. That's why it's kind of like a special safe place for him whenever he's feeling down. All right. The wait staff there love him and take care of him, sort of like, and like their adopted son or brother or whatever. And this is in such stark contrast to Big Daddy, which was made 16 years before this, where Hooters is like, just, they're just dunking on Hooters the entire time and making fun of anyone who would dare lower themselves to work there. It's like, what happened to Sandler in between those two movies? I'm fascinated by.
I bet it's that he befriended the CEO of Hooters.
I was going to say, maybe he had daughters and he realized, like, maybe my daughters might work at Hooters someday. Should I judge them? I don't know.
Listen, I wouldn't stop loving them, even if they did decide to work at Hooters. Now, there's an idea. But, like, we need to talk about, like, the way this plays out in this first scene of the movie. It actually is kind of, you do have to sort of like break it down a little bit. So Drew Barrymore goes out to the table where Adam Sandler is sitting there. He drinks her beer while she's gone.
Right.
Huge, I haven't been to Hooters in forever. I just know, like, I remember like when I go to Outback Steakhouse, they have these gigantic mugs and it looks like one of those, like a humongous mug of beer.
Yeah, finishes it in like while she's walking up, like the full pint.
Yes, like he just destroys it. And then he's watching TV, like not paying attention to her.
Which is bullshit TV. It's like an axe, like it's like a wood chopping competition.
Well, he's like, I'm watching the game, and she looks up and it's not, I guess that's like, I don't know if they knew what was gonna be on the TV when they acted that scene, but it is kind of funny. He's like, well, I'm watching the game, and it's just like a dude like splitting logs with an axe. But
he is wearing a Dick's Sporting Goods shirt, which I'm sure is about to come up, which does put him in the mood of like, it does like sell him as like a, yeah, he could be a really sporty guy. I mean, he's right. Also just, well, yes. A Sandler dude.
That is his defining character trait, is that he's a sports dude to the point of obtuseness with his daughters. Like, he's such a dude that he doesn't understand that calling your daughter, naming your daughter after ESPN is not a normal thing. But he tells Drew Barrymore, he's like, I ordered you the buffalo shrimp with the sauce on the side. They'll do that for me here. Which is a funny line before you know the context, which, like, it turns out he actually is being serious. Like, they do treat him special. Like, they bring him, like, a heart made out of cheese sticks or whatever. Drew Barrymore and he, like, they're sort of bickering with one another. Is that where he mentions that he met his wife? Does he mention that in the opening scene that he met his wife there?
Well, it's going terribly, and I think it's like after Barrymore like just makes a mess of herself with the hot sauce and the onion soup, and She's like, so what, so like, what, like, what reason did your poor wife leave you for? And he's like, cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. And just fucking like pump on the brake, like screeching noise in my brain when I saw all this in theater. Sort of like, okay, the Hooters, the product placement, he's oblivious, he's a dude. And then when he said cancer, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. The Hooters thing comes up much later as like a moment of her like coming to understand him. So like
that's when they learned that she worked at Hooters.
Yeah.
Right.
She managed it. So I'm not sure when I'm already forgetting when they reveal or like when Barrymore learns that they met at Hooters. But
it's one of those mother-daughter moments that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Bella Thorne later is like walking with Drew Barrymore and says like, "Oh yeah, like our mother was a worker, like a manager.
She's a manager of Hooters.
But presumably she was an employee before she was a manager, you know? I think we're given to understand that. So she drinks, they sort of start to warm, their dynamic is sort of, you know, it's good writing, and I'm actually not saying that totally disingenuously here, because this opening scene does sort of like set up their dynamic for most of the movie, which is that they are weirdly antagonistic towards one another, like bickering at each other the whole way until they start talking about their kids, and they genuinely sort of soften towards one another as they are realizing that this other person has this like has this commitment that they also have. They have that in common, is their like love for their children. And then that is derailed by Drew Barrymore eats one of the buffalo shrimp, and it Hooters, if you would like to sponsor this podcast and you're listening, I'll say buffalo shrimp as many times as you need me to. but she eats the buffalo shrimp, and it's so spicy that she reaches for her beer and only then realizes that there's no beer left. And she pours French onion soup, which I would not be ordering the French onion soup at Hooters.
Is this a real menu item? Like, does Hooters actually carry French onion soup?
I'm gonna look that up right now.
Sandler doesn't strike me as a French onion soup kind of guy.
It's not on.
But it's off the bat. I mean, I like movies that open just in the middle of the scene, in media res, as they say, and just how quickly this thing falls apart, and it's, you know, how mad Barrymore is when she realizes that her beer is gone. It's just I feel like this movie starts off really strong. You start to feel its bloat when they're in Africa, and right. It kind of becomes like a very, there are many parts of this movie that feel very Disney-fied, for good and for ill, but this first half hour when it's essentially just Sandler and Barrymore getting to know each other, bickering, and also softening, like, it's really strong stuff. Later on when they meet at the supermarket or like gas station, whatever, the convenience store, that's maybe like, because I was just rewatching this earlier, that's maybe like I would have to be like, I have to place that whole scene between the porn mags and the tampons, like, as maybe like a top five Sandler Barrymore scene, just with them riffing on each other and having a good time.
Yeah, they're really good together in the opening scene. And that scene, I think they're at a pharmacy, if I'm not mistaken. But it's like,
yeah, it's like the movie version of the CVS or whatever.
But when they're, yeah, so yeah, they do have this great. And you're right that it does. Unlike it is the opposite with Just Go With It, in a way where Just Go With It really picks up once they leave, and Blended, it is a little bit more like, it's a nice change of scenery, but it doesn't exactly like, it's not like the plot really kicks into gear.
And Just Go With It, it's, so Jennifer Aniston's a single mother in Just Go With It, and here they're both single parents, and so like that movie is about him trying to like become comfortable with her kids, and then this one's really just about two single parents trying to like date again.
I mean, it's a Brady Bunch.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, I guess, point, so, yeah.
Like, at no point in Just Go With It do you ever doubt Aniston's ability as a mother, I guess. Nor do you doubt Barrymore's, you know, like love or commitment to her kids, but like obviously they're like, you know, like her kids are a handful. He has three growing daughters. Obviously they're kind of like drowning a little bit. Whereas with Aniston, she pretty much had it together. Like Just Go With It is Sandler realizing that he wants to be a part of that family. Whereas this one, yeah, it's more of them complimenting each other in a way.
Well, he's not in Just Go With It. He's still like a playboy, like lady killer.
Right.
Who sort of learns that like this is something like I want this like sort of commitment and these responsibilities as opposed to the chasing younger women thing. And in that way, as good as Jennifer Aniston is in that movie, in that way, it doesn't feel that way when you're watching it, but she kind of has less to play on the page than Barrymore does, because Barrymore has a similar realization, like what Jennifer Aniston kind of just has to wait for Sandler to realize, like to recognize what's going on. And like Barrymore, what's nice in Blended is that it's these two people who are so, and I think the movie does a pretty good job of conveying this actually, like this dynamic, but like two people who are so devoted to their kids and their families that they don't think they have enough, they don't really consider themselves having enough room for like romance for themselves or like that sort of relationship. And like the two of them sort of mutually realizing that what bonds them is their dedication to their kids. You know, you don't see that dynamic a ton in romantic comedies, and it's kind of pretty sweet, I think. We also get in this scene before we get out of Hooters. That's when, like, we've talked about her so much already. We get Lauren Lapkus as the babysitter. Barrymore has two sons. Sandler has three daughters. Lauren Lapkus is the babysitter for Drew Barrymore's sons. And they are, apparently, they, like, while Lauren Lapkus calls Drew Barrymore and is just like, oh, like, she's like, one of the sons is like twirling a t-shirt on fire, and the other one like sprays it with a fire extinguisher and coats Lauren Lapkus.
And I need to say, knowing like, because Chris, you sent a text to us that photo of Lauren Lapkus covered in the fire extinguisher cream.
Right.
This is a dirty joke thing. But knowing what I know about those kids' relationship to like their hot babysitter, or the babysitter they're attracted to, just gave me an eerie vibe seeing that. I was like, this is gross.
Okay. Like,
it reminded me of the scene in Scary Movie where they're having sex for the first time.
Okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is a family-friendly podcast.
It's a family-friendly.
I mean, I don't think you're totally off base. I mean, this is also, because like the kid who throws the extinguisher at her is the same son who has gotten like a picture of Lapkus's head and taped to a centerfold picture. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanted to mention that we also, the Lauren Lapkus scene here at the beginning, we also get another product placement from, I think it's Mr. Bubble, the bubble bath. He's like, can I have my bath now? Like, and it's like, all right, little man. You know, already we're coming in hot with the product placement. We got Hooters, Mr. Bubble, we got Dick's Sporting Goods. Let's see. We got Drew Barrymore. She's at her job the next day with Wendy McClendon Covey, who is her partner in this business, Closet Queens, and they are like essentially like a Marie Kondo-esque outfit where it's like they go and organize people's closets for them. Sandler later is baffled by this concept, which like again in 2020 or 2019 even, like we're all well aware of Marie Kondo or, you know, Queer Eye or these people who come in and like totally redecorate and like help you organize your life. So
I mean, he's in his right zone to be baffled by it. Like, I mean, he's like a very middle-class person here, and she's basically catering to upper class people who can have a closet the size of my apartment.
That's very true. And so we, Winnie McClendon Covey has this boyfriend named Dick, who she is talking about how much she used the L word with him, you know, recently. they're just talking, and we go to Dick's Sporting Goods, where Adam Sandler is the, I'm never going to refer to them as their character names, who cares? Adam Sandler is the manager of this Dick's Sporting Goods with his good buddy, Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal turning in another terrific cameo appearance.
He's having so much fun.
Adam Sandler's daughter, eldest daughter, Larry, Hillary, short for Hillary, Larry shows up, and she has this sort of page boy haircut. It's Bella Thorne, who is apparently extremely popular for something. I mean, I know she's been in other movies, but like, she's one of those people where if you look her up, she's got like, you know, this many millions of Instagram followers or whatever. Like, so that's a thing.
Yeah, and to me, she's like I guess I'm already an old fogey, because to me, she's always going to be Sandler's eldest daughter from Blended. Like, if I ever meet her, like, you know, be like, oh, hey, I'm a fan of the family film Blended that you did, you know.
Yeah. So basically, she comes and she goes to she's up at the cash register, and this guy who, if I'm not mistaken, is played by Jared Sandler, Adam's nephew, comes up and says like, hey sir, or hey man, or like whatever, and she called me man, and he's just like, you know, why is that a problem? And so he, you know, mistakes her for a man, and you know, that sucks for her, but Sandler seems cool with it, because as you'd expect, you know, a traditional dad, girl that age, he, you know, isn't super keen on her, you know, becoming a woman, you know, or like, you know, getting, you know, sort of coming into her own. So then back at Drew Barrymore's house, we meet her ex-husband, played by Joel McHale. And Joel McHale kind of just playing the role that he always plays, but he plays it well. You know, he's just like a sardonic dickhole.
Yeah, he's going full McHale in this thing.
And, you know, it's made clear that he cheated on her, and he's a scoundrel, and he still, like, every so often will sort of, like, come crawling back, but she wants nothing to do with it. We've got back at the Sandler Casa, there's a bit where Bella Thorne puts, like, Dr. Scholl's, like, foot padding things in her bra, and it's like a real, like Sandler walks in on her while she's doing it, and she freaks out, and he freaks out.
Real quick here, because again, I was rewatching some of this earlier. I know we are firmly in like Sandler being very relaxed with his performances in this stage in his career, but there are occasionally some, like, you know, blink and you'll miss them moments where, you know, he just still kills me. And it's in that scene, yeah, Bella is just like, I guess, you know, patting her sports bra a bit, just kind of looking at herself in the mirror. Sandler walks in. It's a whole, you know, daddy-daughter embarrassment moment. But there's a quick cutaway. It's like Bella sort of jumps up, and the two rubber sole foot things, like, hit the bathroom mirror glass. It cuts to Sandler, and he does, like, reaction. Ah! But if you watch it closely, in like that 1 second of a reaction of him just going, ugh, he goes from like shock to disgust to confusion at what was she using to do this? I know it's a small thing, but I just finally caught it. It's like the third or fourth time I've seen the movie, but just the fact that his shocked reaction ends with him being confused, I died laughing. And he can still bring in the big guns when he wants to.
Yeah, we also, you know, we're all just kind of jumping around here in the before they get to Africa. Drew Barrymore's youngest son has a baseball game, and Drew Barrymore is there watching and providing support, and her friend Wendy McClendon Covey is there. Covey mentions that she and Dick are going on a big trip soon. And Drew Barrymore's son starts getting heckled by these two guys, presumably dads, sitting behind her. And one of them, as Austin texted us, is not Steve Buscemi, but like has a very Buscemi look to him, like extremely Buscemi look to him, like to the point where maybe I should have looked up if it's like a Buscemi sibling of some kind.
I mean, his character should be called not Steve Buscemi.
Yes, that's what he is in my notes. It's not Steve Buscemi.
Oh, it's Michael Buscemi.
So, do you think they're related?
I don't know. It doesn't mention it in the bio, so maybe not.
Well, maybe
it's just coincidence.
Very small.
And then the other guys, Rob Moran, which he's in Dumb and Dumber. And
he's in Dumb and Dumber. He's in Kingpin.
There's Something About Mary.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wait. Yeah, he is. I was going back in my mind being like, is he in There's Something About Mary? He is. He's like one of the cops.
He is. Oh, that's right.
He's, kid isn't great at baseball and he gets heckled. Drew Barrymore talks about how Joel McHale can't take the kids on a proposed rafting trip because he has business. There's also some Cialis product placement here that because they mention it by name when Wendy McClendon Covey basically insinuates that the heckler needs Cialis. She's like, I'm assuming, like after she says it, which is funny. Barrymore back home is carrying her son upstairs and she finds this porno mag under her eldest son's bed with Lauren Lapkus's face like pasted on top. Grossed out by it. And then we have a scene with Sandler talking to his youngest daughter about their dead mother, and talking about like what's the thing you miss most about mommy, like, oh well, she thought I was awesome or whatever.
This is Sandler's Sleepless in Seattle moment where he has the big monologue of how much he loved mommy and, oh, she actually liked me. Can you believe it? A doofus like me. Like, I defy anyone to watch this and not melt.
And then go ahead.
Well, this movie has one of those things where it's like, wow, really? What a cool parent. Whenever she's in her older son's room, he's got a like full size, what you would find at any arcade, Star Wars pinball machine just in his room, which is just an amazing thing for any kid.
Yeah, maybe that was Joel McHale trying to show off.
Yeah. It's like, and you know, after she finds the gross babysitter porn mag thing, she like rips it up in disgust, but then afterwards realizes, wait, no, I've invaded my son's privacy. I gotta replace this and make it right. She is a very cool mom, and her sons are disgusting little monsters.
Very true.
Like, what is this? Does this kid have a disease that makes him fall asleep? Because she's carrying him several times in this movie. It's like
Austin. I mean, because you already made the Scary Movie comparison. I'm just gonna say you tend to get sleepy.
Yeah.
Anyways, we can cut all this out. it is weird. He's passed out constantly.
He's narcoleptic. He's
narcoleptic. Yes, that's of course what we mean. While Sandler's having this conversation with his youngest daughter, Bella Thorne and Larry comes in and says that she needs tampons, and so he goes to a convenience store. Sorry, he goes to a pharmacy to get tampons for his daughter. And I really liked the joke. I mean, there's Tampax product placement, of course, but I really liked the bit where he saw Poise as a brand, and he was like, "Poisey, that's a little close, guys." I don't think I'd ever heard that line before, but I was like, "That's pretty funny."
Gave a cup. What is that for coffee? Like it's.
and then runs into Drew Barrymore trying to figure out which magazine she ripped this image out of, like that her son had, like what magazine her son had. And Sandler's like, oh, buying porn for your son, very progressive. and he also mentions that he likes the kid's style for reading magazines rather than the internet. And he says, I respect that. And that's a little bit of Adam Sandler doing the Babe Ruth calling a shot thing, because his very next film is Men, Women, and Children, in which Adam deals with a dangerous internet addiction.
Reminded me that we have to watch that. Yeah, okay.
Calling it right now. I'll do my own Babe Ruth shot calling now. The worst film he's ever done, and it will be our worst episode.
Oh, boy.
Maybe not our worst episode, but...
Oh, boy.
But anyways, so let's see. His
middle-aged daughter, the one that's like basically seeing the ghost of their mom the entire time. I guess she was in Endgame.
Yeah, she plays Ant-Man's daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And her last name is Furman, and I was wondering if she's sisters with the orphan girl, like the girl from the film Orphan, the titular orphan.
I don't know this orphan you speak of.
Wait, really?
No, I'm just...
Oh, I was going to say. I was like, wait, oh, dude, you got to watch Orphan. We get very exciting for all the Billy Gilmore fans out there, because we get an appearance of Alan Covert in the scene, but not just Alan Covert. He's playing 10 Second Tom, his character from 51st Dates. And so...
That's right.
He's confused, talking to the cashier at the pharmacist, played by maybe she's a pharmacist, I don't know, but played by Mary Pat Gleason, who's in That's My Boy, and maybe one other. I think she's in That's My Boy. But she's in the Sandra Squad. She's been in some of these. She also is like, wow, buying porn for your son, very progressive. Sandler and Barrymore out in the parking lot are sort of like, you know, she's mad that he, like, you know, sold her out to the cashier and, like, admitted that she was buying porn for her son or whatever, even though they're going to, like, swap the things. And they learn after they're bickering out there. He says the thing about, like, she's like, oh, like, I guess I'll just have to live. Like, he's like, Hooters is too good for you. And she's like, well, I guess I'll learn to live without Hooters. And he's like, we've been doing a good job so far in life. And she's like, I don't understand. He goes, you're right. I didn't realize they were that big. Like, had breasts. And then they realize they have the exact same white minivan. Mm-hmm. Because they're just so dedicated to their kids. So next day she tells her sons that they can't go on the trip with their dad. They're super bummed. Sandler shows up because they swapped credit cards accidentally at the pharmacy the night before. Wendy McClendon Covey shows up, and she's really upset because she has broken up with her lover Dick after learning that he has 5 children. And I liked that Barrymore and Sandler's reaction to, like, she's like, I broke up with him. He has this horrible secret. What, is he married? Worse, he has kids. And they both laugh like, surely she must be joking.
Right.
Like, I don't know, it's a funny, like, again, it's like, oh, they have this thing in common together. They're both just like, they have, like, the exact same laugh over it. Like, oh, I can't believe this. So it turns out that this Dick is Adam Sandler's boss, which maybe Dick's Sporting Goods actually is. I suppose it's not outside the realm of possibility to imagine that it is run by a man named Dick. But it's weird that it's like, oh yeah, like the boss, Adam Sandler's boss of his company is a guy named Dick. Oh, of course, we should put two and two together. It's the owner of Dick's Sporting Goods.
Of course.
But so basically what happens is that somehow both Dick and Wendy McClendon Covey have a claim to these tickets. I'm not sure how they could get to Africa without knowing that the other party was going to Africa. But basically, Drew Barrymore asked Wendy McClendon Covey, can I buy, it won't be like full value, but can I like buy the ticket, your tickets, so that I can take my sons to Africa? I sure hope they have passports, because that's how spur of the moment they. But and Sandler leaves and walks out onto her front lawn and calls Dick, and is like, "Hey, could you give me your tickets to I don't know. Again, I don't know why he thought like I don't know why Wendy McClendon and Covey would even have any tickets to give away if Dick was the one who bought it. Why she would have exactly three tickets to give away rather than her just one, I don't know. You know, well, you just have to suspend your disbelief a little bit.
It's because he's got five kids, and so those two people would be seven. So I guess they were just thinking, like, we're going into this resort with a we're a family of four. We're going to be in this room for seven, or this family of three, room for seven.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess the notion is that if one of them had had one more child, some family would have had to go home.
Well, and it's not, we're not even there yet, but it's not like this place is even really set up for seven people, but
right. So anyways, just hard, like, so both of them, like, side by side basically are like, we're going to Africa. Hard series of hard cuts to Africa, like, we are just waste no fucking time getting us there, just like it, all of a sudden
it very quickly becomes like a travel commercial, and they're, and Barrymore and his and her kids are walking up, and there's Terry Crews doing the whole Greek chorus thing for the rest of the movie. It's beautiful.
Terry Crews doing the Greek chorus thing where he's dancing around with his band Tattoo, I believe is what they're called.
The Russian group?
Yeah, the Russian group, the running through my head, running through my head. No, I believe they say Tattoo at some point, but don't quote me on that. So, Terry Crews is there, and Drew Barrymore sees Adam Sandler and is like, what is he doing here?
And Sandler and all of his girls, and they're all wearing track suits.
Like Ben Stiller and his kids in the Royal Tenenbaums.
I never noticed that before. That's so perfect.
I like that when Sandler's daughter... Sandler's daughter calls Barrymore's son a butthole, and Barrymore's like, language, and Adam Sandler's just like, how about you not tell my daughter what to say? And the littlest one is like, butthole, 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 and he's like, not you. So they're like, what are we gonna do? Oh no. And then we meet, I'm gonna butcher his name, please forgive me everyone out there in podcast land, Abdoulaye Ngom. He plays Mfana, the tour guide, concierge, all around sort of master of ceremonies for this resort.
Absolutely Sandler Squad member.
Yes, he's 100% member of the Sandler Squad, last scene, and that's my boy. He's very funny.
Who is he and That's My Boy?
I'm positive that's what it said that he was in. One second.
I also know that he's Dr. Shakaloo and Grandma's Boy.
Austin, he is he's Dr. Shakaloo in that. And That's My Boy, he is Father Shakaloo.
That's right. And I believe he is in Murder Mystery as he's one of the guests on the boat. He's like a sultan or something like that.
Huh. It actually doesn't appear that that's the case. He has not been in any since Legion.
Yeah, I owe him an apology. In any case, he's hearing this. He's very funny.
Drew Barrymore's youngest son, he's a madman. He's like swinging on these elephant tusks, and Barrymore freaks out about it. They get shown to their rooms, and there's a room for the kids. And then there's the suite for the adults that is just like a honeymoon suite with like a vibrating heart-shaped bed. Looks like something that would be in a Vegas hotel, not so much like a Tony South African resort, but you know, I've never been in a honeymoon suite before, so what do I know? Mm-hmm. There's a joke here that I thought was very funny. The kid is eating cherry panties. Drew Barrymore's just like, what are cherry panties? And it's cherry panties. And the kid also being like, oh, this used to be a firehouse? Right. Like the stripper pole.
And I love that this scene, it literally ends with Barrymore just screaming in frustration at her boys. Like, clearly she's a very devoted and like patient and loving mother, but like these kids are animals.
So then we go, we get I'm not sure if it's supposed to be brunch or dinner or a midday snack or whatever, but in the big dining area. They go sit at a table where Kevin Nealon, Sandler Squad favorite, is there. Kevin Nealon, very funny in this movie. Nice to see him appear. I like that. He kind of has the energy in this. He has a little bit of the energy of his character from Happy Gilmore, where he's a little bit like hippy dippy almost. I like it when Sandler's daughters come in, and the middle daughter, Espen. It's Larry, Espen, and Lou. And
yes,
ESPN is Espen, and Espen has this thing that she's quite frankly seems a little too old for. But she has this thing where she like basically. It's like her mom is her imaginary friend, essentially. It's like she needs a table setting for her mom to sit down. And I like Kevin Nealon's response to that, where he's like, ignoring the weirdness, just going off, go with the flow. And it's like, and he's not actually being mean to her about it. He's just like, okay, ignoring the weirdness, like super positive vibes from Kevin Nealon.
Yeah.
He's got a wife, I suppose, named Ginger, who is a busty blonde with an Anna Faris but on more helium voice.
Right. The actress is is Jessica Lowe, who has done some voices on Bob's Burgers. I think a lot of TV stuff. I really don't know her from anything else, notable, but I think she's very funny here.
She's in Sandy Wexler.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Fun.
I have to feel like here the because this movie has some cross-connecting threads between 50 First Dates. And I feel like Kevin Nealon's character here is, and he's done this type of character before, where it feels like it's his Happy Gilmore character. The whole, well, I'm going to talk to you about something very softly, and it's going to be very direct about what's going on, and we'll ignore the situation.
So it's Nealon doing, at least maybe perhaps a version of Happy Gilmore. We saw 10 Second Tom earlier. And later in the film, we see Alexis Arquette as Georgina.
That's right.
From Wedding Singer, which is not only really cool and like a nice callback to Sandler and Barrymore's first movie together, but I guess I would want to give it up to Sandler and friends kind of being progressive with the times and properly gendering Georgina, which is cool.
And it's, yeah, and particularly not that, it, I mean, this is not a particularly egregious thing from Sandler compared to other comedies, but he has had some a man who wants to be a woman or a woman who wants to be a man, like jokes in some of his earlier films. And so, yeah, it's a nice gesture. I like that. We also meet Kevin Nealon's son, who I realize when Adam Sandler calls him, says something about don't you need to go back to your coffin? I was like, oh, it's a Twilight joke. It's like a joke about he looks like Edward Cullen.
Gotcha.
And that's like no longer a reference that makes that much sense anymore because no one talks about Twilight anymore.
I guess it still plays. Like he's clearly just a moody, pale, sensitive boy. Now that you said that, I guess that would have been more of an explicit Twilight thing.
In 2014, it was like, oh, we all know what he's referring to here. But I guess he's pale. I guess that's why he's a vampire. Oh, right. But Terry Crews is in this scene too, talking about blended families and talking about singing about blended families and how this is blended week for everybody, where it's we've got stepmoms and stepdads, and we've got domestic partnerships. And we've got just regular old booty calls. And as I said to y'all earlier today, when they say booty calls, the actor that they cut to bears at least a passing resemblance to murdered pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Okay, moving right along. And then we're just into another commercial for this resort, We've got you know, just like the wave pool and like the like animal, the space where you can like pet baby animals or whatever. All sorts of cool stuff. Later that night, Sandler is off in a boat by himself, and he freaks out because he thinks there are crocodiles nearby.
That's the patented Sandler freakout in this movie. It comes out of nowhere, and it's super funny. I guess there's like a little montage of everyone having fun at the resort. There's a quick one that I like when it's Barrymore's eldest son. He's like in the wave pool and he's making fun of Espen. He sees Espen up like on like the side and makes some crack about like, oh, Espen, is your dead mom gonna like want to come into the pool with me? And then a big wave just plows him. And she's like, "Huh, good one, mom." I don't know. Again, maybe it's, you know, quarantine kind of rewiring my brain, but little things like that made me laugh and also made me genuinely feel something. Sure. Too. That kid is such a the son is such a shithead that I like any sort of pain that comes to him in this movie because it's well deserved.
I gotta say, because we talked about this in Jack and Jill, as we get into these like Sandler movies where he's like a family man and he's got like kids, I feel like it's a little bit less of an issue with Grown Ups because Grown Ups focuses so much on the adults and there's a lot of adults to go around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, just go with it. Has like, those kids are not like excruciatingly awful. Jack and Jill, those kids are a total bust. Like they add nothing to the movie and any attempts for them to do something fall flat. These kids, I think even the monster, you know, masturbator one, like, I think they're pretty funny. I think they're all pretty funny and charming, honestly.
This is my favorite Sandler family movie, absolutely by far. I think him and his dynamic with his daughters, I find very, very charming. There's a bit coming up with Bella Thorne on the basketball court where I feel like the movie goes too hard and Sandler's character goes from sort of clueless dad to like emotionally abusive in a way. Like it's too much. I feel like the movie kind of just like overdoes it. When he's like, makes him crack about her sports bra on a basketball court with other dudes. It's like, no dude, she's a 15-year-old girl. This is not appropriate. Don't talk like that. It's the one time where I'm like, ah, come on, dude. And the rest of it's very, very sweet. Like the stuff with Espen and the imaginary mom, I'm a softie, I guess, but that shit works for me. And it's all very sweet.
I always felt that Bella Thorne's like whole thing in here was like a weirdly, like a weird thing where it's just like basically this whole kind of like, I don't know, like she's like kind of dancing between like, I'm a teenage girl, I'm not a teenage girl, and then I'm a teenage girl that's like lusting over this guy. There was always like a weird like dynamic to this movie for me in that sense.
When seeing of weird dynamics, Barrymore and Sandler are both carrying their respective children back to their hotel room.
Narcoleptics.
They discover that the son is still pasting Lauren Lapkus's face over things and is passed out cold and it's gross and weird. The next morning, none of the kids want to wake up. They're too tired. And so Sandler and Barrymore go out for coffee. They both have the same coffee order. And they witness two rhinos, one rhino mounting another one. which is funny. And then we get that basketball scene that you were alluding to, Chris, where Tim Herlihy, Sandler squad member, plays basketball dad, and it's Sandler and Larry, Bella Thorne, playing basketball against Tim Herlihy and his son. And when this guy, Kevin Nealon's son, I can't remember his name, but when he walks by, Larry, Bella Thorne, tries to act more sort of like explicitly feminine to sort of flirt from afar, where she's like voguing, as Adam Sandler puts it.
Voguing, yeah, which is a very funny line.
And then skip it, and it's like, just no, stop skipping or whatever. And then, yeah, he makes this awful crack about like, you don't, if it's the bra that's constricting you, you don't need it anyways, just take it off. She cries and runs away. And Tim Hurley is like, that was a girl. And he's like, yeah. And he looks at his son and says, you suck. And Terry Crews shows up with his posse to sing about how this kid sucks. Which is pretty great. And then we get the, after that, we go to them on ATVs, or like four wheelers or whatever, like riding around, like out on the plains. Mufana is just like, yeah, it's so safe. Like, look, you can do anything. Like, watch me. And he runs an old woman off the road. He's like, watch out, Granny. And she flies off the road and slams into a tree.
Presumably dead.
Dead. We never see her again. We have to assume she was, her carcass was hauled away by lions. So that happened. That's pretty great. And then we're in this, what looks to be like an arts and crafts class for children. And Jackie Sandler is there. And Jackie Sandler is talking about how I believe it must be her kids. At first I thought she was talking about her husband, and I was like, whoa, this got really dark. But she's talking about how she woke up and her kids, her step kids, I guess, were trying to smother her with a pillow. but they felt some guilt about it, so that was progress. And we have Kevin Nealon and what's the actress's name again?
It is Jessica Lowe.
Jessica Lowe. And they have fish face paint on each, on like the opposite cheek, so that they can like kiss each other, and it makes it look like these fish are touching mouths. I wrote down, why are they in the class? Because they don't have like a child that would just be like doing finger paints or whatever. But that's neither here nor there. Sandler's youngest, Lou, asks to be taken to the bathroom, and Barrymore takes her. They have like a sweet little moment in the bathroom where, you know, it's like the little girl, Lou, has this like satanic voice that she puts on, and Drew Barrymore sort of like does it back to her. And it's like very, you know, sort of like affectionate and charming. And then she comes back outside, and in a moment worthy of a grown-up sequel, Adam Sandler and her son are just riding these two ostriches. And like, a crowd has formed. And I'm just like, wow, this came together very quickly. Sandler like falls off of his, and the kid falls off of his, but he does this like amazing like spinning backflip off of it and lands on his feet. It's incredible.
And at this moment, I just want to like applaud this, like the surrounding cast of like all the people that work at this resort. Because like here you've got the sleeping man who shows up several other times throughout the film. And just like, then you have Terry Crews and all his people, and you have Mufana.
It's either Mufana or Mufana.
Mufana. Yeah, but they're all great. Like, they add a lot to it.
Oh yeah, no, they're all terrific. I mean, yeah, Crews and Mufana especially. So we get this keeps popping up, but Barrymore's oldest son, by way of saying that like she's too good for Adam Sandler, he keeps talking about how hot his mom is, and he says like, oh, she has a rockin' bod, and even like the hotel employees are just like, ooh, that's not right, man. And he goes, it was out of context. And the like hotel barber or whatever goes, was it? like big reaction, very funny, big laugh from me. Barrymore sees Larry lusting after Kevin Nealon's son, kind of talks to her about like, oh, we should get you a makeover because you shouldn't just keep going to the same barber that your dad goes to. And that is when she drops Yeah, I guess that is the moment when you actually learn that fact, is that like, yeah, it's like when you learn that her mother, Adam Sandler's deceased wife, worked at Hooters, was a manager. And, you know, Barrymore has that sort of like, oh my gosh, like I didn't realize like that actually held meaning. The first time I saw this in theaters, I rolled my eyes at that moment. I was like, are you really trying to do this for Hooters? And now I find it, after all these Sandler movies and all this product placement, I find it very charming. So that night at dinner, Barrymore mentions, Kevin Nealon and I believe her name is Ginger in the film. They're just like,
yeah.
How are you, like, how did y'all meet? And she says, well, we, it was a blind date at Hooters. And Adam Sandler's like, oh God, here we go again. Like thinking she's going to like tear him a new one for it. And she's like, and it was lovely with very nice service and very professionally maintained or whatever. So it's like, oh, like Drew Barrymore's like, you know, she's altered her perception a little bit of this. Larry walks in to the room, all made up, looking like Bella Thorne. And they do this joke, which they repeat later when Drew Barrymore gets made over or like sort of pretties herself up more than she's a gorgeous woman, you know what I mean? Where
I really like this bit, by the way.
She's walking down the stairs in slow motion. And it plays like a romantic song in slow motion as like Kevin Nealon's son is looking at her.
Right.
Which is, like, I'll make love to you like you want me
to. It's boys to men, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's another song that happens when Barrymore sees her like a, you know, oh, like she did it. She's like, she's really blossoming. And then push in on Sandler's face and it's R.E.M.'s End of the World as We Know It.
Yeah, it's, this movie's budget was $40 million, I believe. I have to imagine.
That's cheap for them.
Yeah. But I have to imagine a chunk of it went to the rights they use for these two bits. Later on, we have another one with Barrymore with a few other songs too. I think the whole music, like the whole needle drop joke thing, the clip of it from with Barrymore later in the movie after her makeover, that was the first clip of this movie that I saw. I think when Barrymore was on Fallon promoting it, and then like Sandler came out and they sing a song together, it's very nice. But my first intro to Blended, I didn't see a trailer or anything like that. It was just Barrymore coming down the stairs and then doing the whole needle drop of the different people reacting to her. And I remember thinking, like, this is so dumb. This is such a dumb joke. I really, really like this. it works.
I think it's clever now. Like, I really appreciated it.
Yeah.
Go around.
So Sandler is not cool with it. He's just like, what was wrong with the way you looked or whatever. But next day, go on a safari trip out looking at, you know, like they're doing this like parasailing thing where it's like you have a parachute and you like, you know, are attached to a truck and their truck's driving along the plains. The oldest son is staring at Ginger as she's flying around in the sky. There's a funny bit where they see a male and female lion with like a little boar, and Mufwana is like, you see, even in nature, there are blended families. And then you hear off screen this ripping and tearing and roaring sound. And it's clear that they have eaten the boar, and Mufwana is just like, I may have misread the situation. So that was a good bit.
The same guy here who fell asleep while they were having the ostrich fight shows up again here as that little boy, as her older son is watching Ginger or whatever fly in the air. Cause it, you know, those parachutes pull like your midsection up, uh-huh. And it's like following her with the binoculars. And then that man is just like, cause the kid's like, oh, I thought I saw an eagle. And then the man is like, I thought I saw a camel, which is just like, Jesus, these jokes.
I'm immensely tickled in this movie that there's literally like a musical troupe coming in every 10-15 minutes to like reiterate the film's themes for you. It's so like this movie is so charmed with itself that it's about blended families. Like, it's, and the fact that it's Terry Crews, like any other person doing that, that whole bit, it'd be like, oh yeah, this is a lot, but with like, but with Terry, it's infectious.
So then, Barrymore goes up on the parachute thing so that she can test it for her son.
Right. I feel like if the movie has a set piece, it's this.
Yes. And the car runs out of gas. The car runs out of gas, and so she like needs to find a way to like come down. Sandler tells her to like kick your legs, like, you know, get like a running start or whatever when you hit the ground. And she's doing that. She's like kicking her legs like crazy. And as she as she's doing it, a rhino walks in the middle of the road and sort of sticks its horn up. And it looks like she might impale herself upon this thing, but she doesn't. Thankfully, she kind of hits it on the butt and like slides off of it. And she and the parachute takes Sandler with it, like basically like knocks him on his ass. Yeah, that's that scene. Basically, it is like it is their set piece, I suppose.
And of course, I think it ends with Terry and Tattoo just laughing their asses off, going, oh. This movie is not above, I guess, punctuating all of its laughs with Terry and his gang. Just bringing it home.
Let's see. After that, we have Sandler and Barrymore go to this massage class, and it's kind of their first like genuine sort of like romantic scene together, where they're being asked to sort of like, you know, find ways to like, you know, help their partner enjoy the physical contact. And so
right.
Sort of like, and Sandler's like bad at it and unpracticed, and like, you know, he like flicks her on the neck, like you'd flick a bug or something.
Have we ever given a picture of how long it's been since his wife died?
No, I don't think that's ever made clear.
I mean,
the daughter's like Lou, the youngest is like 5 or 6.
Right. So she's still pretty young, and she has like memories of mommy. So
it's been 3 years.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it seems like he's maybe the marriage was like having like. I don't know, maybe it's just weird to be with another woman, but yeah, it's like he's like having to go through so much learning, and it is weird too, because he's also had like so much time where he has had the mom around, and then the kids still grew up pretty like
well. They mentioned I guess we didn't say we've got to mention this at the beginning, is that they both say that they got married in like college.
Right.
Like they like haven't been on a first date since like they were like 18 or earlier. So it was like, so you know, that, and I guess that sort of adds to the sense that like these are two people who like it makes more sense that they would be completely unequipped to like
do the whole dating thing.
Yeah, or to even like understand, like it's like they are kind of like, it is by normal romantic comedy standards, it is weird that it takes them so long to even sort of like entertain the possibility that they like might be good together or could be affectionate or intimate with one another, as far as that movie like portrays that. But that's kind of, you know, that's sort of it is kind of interesting that it's like they're two people who seem very, they're so tunnel vision on their kids,
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. they are like kind of like to the point of being oblivious of these other things. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
I say this again as a disclaimer. My dog is whining. I know he does it on other episodes, but that's what you're hearing out there in podcasts.
Oh, it's all good. Chewie's a part of our blended family. But no, like it's interesting though. You know, in this nearly 2 hour, because we're in the era of bloated, you know, Sandler movies, but it's this 2 hour thing. It's a romantic comedy, and it's 75 minutes before they're even literally touching each other, and it's them making, you know, the awkward flicking and that kind of a thing. Really, like, it's a movie that the courtship is based on really wrapped around their kids as opposed to like romantic or sexual chemistry, which is fine because it's Barrymore and Sandler. You already know that they have that.
Right.
So there's no real need to like worry about it. It's the focus on the kids. The kids are the courtship, I suppose, which is an interesting way for this thing.
And both of them had kids at this point and were well into like being parents themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When this movie's made. Yeah. And it's in kind of refreshing that, not that Sandler doesn't every so often, you know, dip his toes into other types of roles, but it is kind of refreshing that they like make another like nominally like romantic comedy and they don't feel the need to be like that they feel like comfortable and sort of like insistent. I mean, Sandler gets to pick and choose these sorts of things. Like he generates this stuff. So it's like, oh, like making it this family centric, I think is kind of a, it's a good, I don't know. It's an interesting, yeah. It's kind of unique.
And it's,
it is. Oh, and speaking of the kids, that was Sadie Sandler that we saw in the beginning during the baseball game. She was like the little girl announcer.
Right. Yes, and his other daughter is in there as well somewhere.
Sunny is one of the stepdaughters, I think. I don't know if she's in that scene with Jackie, but she's one of – I think you see Sunny somewhere in the resort.
Okay, she might be there with Jackie, honestly. But
oh, okay, yeah.
But so then – and, of course, we get Judith Sandler there at the end as well. She's the – Sandler's mom is there with Alexis Arquette and Sadie or whichever one.
Yeah, this movie essentially, I mean, in the sense of like that whole, like they don't know how to date one another. This movie really is kind of catering towards the 40 something single parent demographic. Cause you also have Kevin Nealon, who's also a single parent or divorced parent. Like everybody in here is like kind of not with their original, like, I mean, they're with like half of their family. They don't have everybody there.
Right.
So this is like, this is his divorce, separation, widowing comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, after he tried the dramatic route with Rain Over Me, and then he was just like, no, that's not going to work.
I need to play divorce. Oh, yeah, this is number two of his widowed movies.
Yeah,
right?
Three if you include Hotel Transylvania. But let's see. Basically, the daughter asks Drew Barrymore to tuck her in, and she sings "Somewhere Over the Rainbow" to her. And you know, "Wizard of Oz" was her mother's favorite song, was her favorite movie, and so that like has sparks a connection to there. Next day, Sandler helps one of Drew Barrymore's youngest son, the baseball playing one, to play cricket, and also boxes with the other one. And the kid like punches him in the nuts, and Terry Crews is of course there to sing about it.
This movie is half a musical, which is great. Yeah.
And Winnie McClendon Covey sends Drew Barrymore a nice black dress for I guess like the final night of the vacation or whatever it is. They're back at dinner and we basically do a repeat of the Bella Thorne walking down the stairs bit, but it's Drew Barrymore walking down, and we get you know, Bella Thorne, Adam Sandler, like I'll make love to you like you want me to, and Bella Thorne looking at her, and it's like, oh wow, she's so beautiful. And then the kid, the eldest son, gets the REM End of the World sting. But we also get, we see this character in the background in a few scenes, but this Indian woman.
Oh yes.
Who's apparently super horned up, and she the camera zooms in on her staring at Drew Barrymore and nodding as "I Kissed a Girl" by Katy Perry is playing. laugh.
I'm watching it right now too. Cause like the wife is like super into it, and she gets like checked by her husband, who's like, oh hey, what?
Yeah, yeah. It's so at this the kids all leave because I guess it's adults night at the dining room. I like Mifuana being like, you see the song, it's like love is a many splendored thing, but we put the word blended in there instead. and Sandler's like, well the word is splendored, so wouldn't it be blendered? weird. And he's just like, what's this? What are you saying? Like, it's like, all right, moving on. Terry Crews is up there singing. The Indian woman throws her bra at Terry Crews. Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler have the stargazing package where they go out to like a sort of like, you know, this starlit sort of rendezvous. And they have a monkey in a Hooters outfit bringing them beer. And then later on in the scene, there's a whole band of monkeys playing music, like on these instruments. It's very, I guess they're in Africa, but it's very, it's like, wow, they really pull out all the stops. basically it's like Sandler is sort of unable to wrap his, he's like unable to like go fully into like, be, like Barrymore is clearly more receptive to the notion of like, oh, like there could be something here.
Right.
And Sandler sort of hesitates or like pulls back, which causes Drew Barrymore to retract herself. And he, you know, he can't bring himself to say that he loves her, that he has feelings for her, and she runs off. And shockingly, we're just, again, hard cut back to America. Not even a shot of a plane in midair, not an Indiana Jones. It's like suddenly Drew Barrymore is back in a closet with Winnie McClendon Covey. And it's just like, oh, I, like, okay, like we're not in Africa anymore. I have to think
there's a deleted scene somewhere that's like them checking out or them leaving or something.
Right.
It just feels so unresolved to just be like, we're back. We're a continent away now.
It's so abrupt. But like, yeah, who cares? I guess the movie is just like, all right, wrap it up. Winnie McClendon Covey is back with Dick. Back at Dick's Sporting Goods, Shaq says something. I don't even remember what it was. I don't remember what the setup is, but he says something to Adam Sandler, and there's a Coleman's grill in his hand, so that's product placement. And Adam Sandler is just like, I don't know, who cares, whatever.
He walks up and he says, "Why didn't you kiss her, man?"
Oh yeah. And then after Sandler's response, Shaq, tears, instant tears in his eyes, just goes, "What did Africa do to you?" Shaq is amazing in these Sandler films. Like, he's so funny. So Sandler back home is trying to put bows in his youngest daughter's hair, but it's like garbage ties. And he's trying, which is the point. And then Larry comes down the stairs, and she's dressed like a girl now. She's dressed like she's still got her makeup, or her makeover, rather. And she's going on you will understand this. You just won't understand why they make a big deal out of it. But she's going on like a virtual date, like a Skype date. Back in the day, that would be unusual because normally people would go on actual dates, like out to like restaurants and bars and movie theaters. We'll have like a glossary of terms at the end of the episode.
And was this even a common thing back then? Was this a little bit like ahead of its time?
It's kind of like a newfangled, like, I mean, like video chat is like maybe 3 years old at this point in like a regular like consumer capability like thing. Like Skype was a thing back in like 2009, but like FaceTime and stuff on your phone, like that was like that had not been around for like a super long time.
Yeah, the forward facing camera is a fairly new development. Yeah.
So she's going on this date with Kevin Nealon's son, who's in Vancouver. And they kind of all encourage Adam Sandler to go tell Drew Barrymore that he has feelings for her. He drives over there and oh no, shock of shocks, Joel McHale is there, and he says that he's getting back together with Barrymore. What's up?
You know, I realized though, McHale being there doing that, it's kind of a switch. It's an inverse of what happens to Drew in Wedding Singer, because she goes over to Robbie's house to you know share her feelings, and there's Linda wearing the Van Halen T-shirt, and she's like, "Ugh," and McHale's doing the same thing here.
And of course, Karachi directed both films.
That's right. So there you go. Good old Frank. He knows what he's doing.
But then, Espen lets Sandler's really sad. that he thinks they're getting back together, but Espen lets her dad know that she doesn't think she needs her mom around so much anymore, and it seems like Barrymore's sort of attention to her has like kind of paid these dividends. Drew Barrymore tells off we're not getting back together. Wendy McClendon Covey shows up in the exact same minivan that Sandler and Barrymore drive and is like, yeah, I got to, you know, now I'm part of like the army, the Theodopolis army. Cause that's like Dick's last name, I guess. They keep getting called that while they're at the resort, Theodopolis. And they go to the baseball game. They go to this game. It's, you know, Barrymore's youngest son, Sandler squad member, Dan Patrick is there playing Dick. And I say this every time he shows up now, but it's really, I didn't know until we did this podcast how many times Dan Patrick, former sportscaster Dan Patrick, he is like, he must be the nicest dude in the world. He's in every one of these movies. It's insane. Yeah. I'm amazed they didn't throw him into like Meyerowitz stories and Uncut Gems, like as much as he seems to like be attached to Sandler.
I mean, the fact of the matter is like ESPN, you know how they have like, they show films every so often, like, yeah. And not just sports films, I'm sure. They should just show the Happy Madison like films.
Absolutely.
Like, it's just, there's so many connections. It's like almost like he casts out of watching SportsCenter.
Oh, yes, 100%. I get the, I mean, Sandler's a regular dude in that way.
Yeah.
He literally has a daughter named Espen in this movie. So.
But then, so we also get whichever Sandler daughter is in the announcer's booth.
It's Sadie, who's Sadie. Calling and the game.
We get, as you mentioned earlier, Alexis Arquette as Georgina.
Yes.
And we have Judith Sandler, Mr. Sandler's father. I mean, it was a mother. Sorry, Stan and Judy. It's Judith. So that's fun. So the kid, the youngest son is up at bat and he's real nervous. And then Adam Sandler shows up with his daughters, to cheer him on. The kid hits a home run. The ball bounces on the ground and he hits it kind of like cricket. So it's a nice callback there. He runs. He wins the game or whatever. Everyone's all happy. And then Sandler, sort of pulls Drew Barrymore aside and, you know, confesses that, he loves her. And she's just like, well, I'll have to, whatever she says, like, I have to think about it or whatever. And he's just like, really? Like, he's like all deflated. And she's like, oh no, I'm just kidding with you. I had to get you back for Africa. and he's just like, oh, you like, and then they kiss. And of course, what happens? Classic ending to any rom-com. The camera whips into the sky and Terry Crews is in a hot air balloon singing about the ending of the movie. And that is the thrilling conclusion to 2014's Blended.
I'm going to watch it again as soon as we're done, by the way.
It's a trip. Yeah, it's a fun movie. It's definitely, I mean, I feel like we've actually, throughout the episode, we've done a pretty good job of kind of explaining what we like about it, or dislike.
It's an unassuming movie with its charms, I suppose, is what I find so charmed with, you know, so winning about it. The well loved chemistry between Barrymore and Sandler, it's so lived in and comfortable by this point. The stuff with the kids is really strong, I feel like, and feels very natural, especially Sandler with the daughters. There's a lot going on here, just moment by moment, that I find super charming and very rewatchable. Like, this is, for me at least, this has become like a rainy day, sick, like if you have the blues kind of movie to kick back with and just relax.
Yeah, totally. It's I mean, I think it's an extremely worthy entry into the Sandler Barrymore canon. And I think I think talking about it here, I'm sort of like clarifying even more for myself, like what it does differently and how it's like a neat evolution of their dynamic together, where it is like they have some more years on them. They're well into the age where they would have families, and like, so they play that angle very well, and it's very touching. And I think, you know, if I had to guess, and if we're lucky, I might be able to get my mom on for a little additional interview, to add on to this episode. So I can ask her myself, but if I had to bet, I think that's probably why my mom loves the movie so much, is it's like the notion of like, you know, if your kids are your entire world, it's like, well, then how do you relate to someone else in the way that like a romantic partner does? And it's like, oh, well, we relate to each other because we have this thing that we're very passionate about, and that's our kids. And
absolutely,
I think the movie, and like, you know, kind of similar to we this is pre-COVID, we were already defensive of the like, hey, like I just like hanging out with Adam Sandler and his whole gang. Like, it's just like, it's comforting. It's low stakes, it's low investment in a lot of ways. And like, that can be the right thing, you know, a lot of times, but it's just the kind of thing where it's like, yes, if you're expecting it to be like Cracker Jack plotting and like, whip smart, you know, repartee, whatever, between like the actors, it's like, yes, like the movie has a certain slackness to it,
but it yes.
no longer has any, that like has almost like no bearing on my like relationship to the movies at this point anymore. It's just like, oh no, like that's just a fact. It's like saying that like, you know, a movie is like moving pictures with sound. It's just like, yeah, like it's just a fact that these movies don't like, they're not whip smart, tightly plotted, whatever. It's just like, if I can get on the wavelength of like, I enjoy hanging out with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore, and they don't, they get out of the way of anything that would make that a lot less enjoyable. So I think this movie's hella charming.
For sure.
Yeah, I've seen
same. It. I know plenty would disagree. I prefer this slightly to 51st Dates, which I warmed up a lot more on since we discussed it. But for me, it's like Wedding Singer blended 51st Dates, but as just like a trilogy of charming chemistry between these two lovely actors. They could certainly have done worse, and you know, fingers crossed. And, well, by the way, like for some reason in my mind, I think Blended is older than it is. Like I in my head, it's like, oh yeah, he did that around 2009 or 10. It's only 6 years old. It's only 6 years old. So hopefully, in another 4 years, say maybe Sandler and Barrymore can find another project, because God, they are, like, they're so great together.
Sandler and Barrymore are the If the last movie, if we're going by Richard Linklater movies, if Grown Ups 2 was Dazed and Confused, Blended is Before Midnight. I just hope that we're going to get like a next, like, you know, you wonder if they're going to leave it as a, like Before Midnight, you wonder if they're going to leave it as a trilogy, or if they're going to like, you know, bring them back later on. You know, Austin, I know we talked before the episode started a little bit about this, but, and Chris, you know, your thoughts on this as well, like, you know, this compared to Just Go With It, it's like, I think that, you know, again, it's hard to compare because Jennifer Aniston has a completely different energy, but I personally think this is the better film. I think it's the best
environment. I do too. I feel like Just Go With It, I'll probably defend with more enthusiasm, because that was like, that to me feels like that, like that's a movie not unlike say Jack and Jill or The Grown Ups. Like, that's a movie that like needs sort of propping up and some reclaiming of, because that's, because like Just Go With It was firmly in the like, oh, this is trash bullshit now. But like, no, it's actually really, really fun and an interesting precursor to Murder Mystery. Blended, I feel like, sort of speaks for itself with its charms. Maybe it's not one that's maybe it's not one of the Sandler staples for people. Like earlier I was talking to my folks saying that we were doing an episode tonight and told them that we were doing it on Blended, and they hadn't even heard of it, and they love The Wedding Singer. Like, it's not like they're unfamiliar with this world. But I feel like the people who have seen Blended and who are into Sandler have a lot of affection for it. low-key, low-stakes charms, which is very much my jam right now. So, yeah, no, I think I do prefer overall this to Just Go With It. There's maybe a little bit more just sweetness to this one, as is typified by the Barrymore movies. And just the stuff with Sandler and his daughters always kills me. I prefer this to Just Go With It. But as far as the Sandler vacation movies go, I think they're both, perfectly worthy entries.
Yeah. But Austin, you disagree?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just, I think part of my, Blended, I have this relationship to it. That's just kind of I don't know. It just seems kind of it seems like a straightforward film at times, it's very, by the books as what we would have come to expect. Mm-hmm. And I guess Just Go With It, I'd always written it off as that, oh, that's a bad one. I haven't watched it. And I didn't watch it until this podcast. And I think maybe what has gotten me so much with that over this, I do agree this has some qualities, the family dynamics, which I guess are kind of unmatched among the many other Adam Sandler family films, in terms of having the ensemble actually doing the work versus just Sandler and then occasional fart joke or something like that. But yeah, I think watching Just Go With It, I was just surprised by it and oh wow, there's actually a lot more here than I would have given it credit for, having never seen it.
There's some crazy, there's a little bit of madness to Just Go With It that this one doesn't have. Nick Swardson's character is just perfectly insane. And the Dave Matthews, Nicole Kidman stuff is just
right.
Kind of on its own planet. So I can see that. There's there's a little bit of Jack and Jill spirit in that, a sprinkling, a tiny pinch of it, in otherwise fairly normal.
I think personally to me too, it's like a deflection from me of family films. Cause I felt the same way about Hotel Transylvania, where it's this just isn't for me. And I think I appreciate this for its family aspect. Yeah. I hate my family. Yeah. Don't get him. Don't understand family. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like this to me plays out more like a Parent Trap type film in a way.
Yeah.
Versus sure. Just Go With It, which I kind of took in that because it was kind of how it was led up to me, in terms of its re-evaluation as a screwball comedy, which I was I think that's an apt feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the musical interludes with Terry and Tattoo provide that kind of lunacy. That's where it ties it all together and I don't want to say that it gives it an edge, because that's not really it, but it gives it a bit of that sort of patented Sandler anything could happen sort of energy that I'll really appreciate. You pointed out Wilson, but especially after Tim Herlihy burns his son, it's like, oh, you suck, you got beat by a girl, and then just there's Terry and his band in a line, were they waiting this entire time just to rip on this kid? It comes out of nowhere. It's so funny. I do sort of like that as a running sort of bit of lunacy in this movie. Yeah. That's also very sweet and cute too, because it's blended.
And nothing tops the watch out granny thing. Yeah. That's probably one of the funniest jokes in Sandler films from here till 2019.
Yeah, agreed. Speaking of that, this movie is kind of, I feel like this movie, this and Pixels, he's on a losing, with the except Grown Ups 2 did well, and the Hotel Transylvania movies had taken off and were successful, but he's otherwise on this losing streak. Jack and Jill was a flop. That's My Boy was a flop. This is a disappointment. Doesn't make nearly as much money as they wanted it to. And then his next real movie, his real Happy Madison movie, Pixels, is a big bomb too. And He has two other movies in there that we'll get to, unfortunately, but The Cobbler and Men, Women, and Children. But basically, this is sort of like him on like the decline. Like people are writing Sandler's career obituary as like a major movie star when this movie comes out. They're just like, you know, this movie came out the same weekend as the Gareth Edwards Godzilla, if I'm not mistaken. And it got trounced. And it is, yeah, it's kind of interesting that this movie, you know, I don't know if it's like been reclaimed or anything like that, or if it's like found an audience on a video. I know it did with my mother, but yeah, it's a shame because this one is sort of like an asterisk in his filmography. And I don't think it necessarily does. It not making a lot of money doesn't have any bearing on its quality, considering what has made money in Sandler's filmography.
And also, by the way, like, indeed, this movie didn't do that well opening weekend. Like, it made $14 million opening weekend. It opened third behind X-Men, and I remember what the other one was. But overall, it wound up grossing, like, $120 against its $40 budget. So, like, it wasn't a flop. It just, but certainly we are on the box office downswing, I suppose.
Right. I mean, Jack and Jill makes $70 million domestic, but the budget was $75 million. So, like, it's insane that movie made $70 million, but, like, it just wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. So then, so I guess other than that, we've just got our categories, which we forgot during the Grown Ups 2 episode. We were having too much fun. That whole episode was a category. We were running down the categories, but we got them again tonight. And those categories. So there's no slumming love interest, of course. Drew Barrymore is a national treasure, and she is not slumming in any way, shape, or form. Let's see. So that leaves us with Sandler's Squad. So we, of course, now Lauren Lapkus is perhaps, she's provisional Sandler Squad, but she's never been in another actual Adam Sandler movie. So she's sort of an asterisk there.
Right.
Incredible for the wrong.
It's only a matter of time.
It's only a matter of time, especially after The Wrong Missy hit so hard. I feel like she's just going to start showing up in all, like, getting real roles in these movies.
Maybe she's a part of those Hubie Halloween reshoots. We can only
great. We need more Lapkus. so we get obviously Drew Barrymore, Sandler Squad, Die Hard. We get Shaquille O'Neal. We get Jared Sandler. We get Alan Covert. We get Mary Pat Gleason. We get Terry Crews. We get Abdoulaye Ngom. We have Kevin Nealon. We have Tim Herlihy. We've got Jackie Sandler. We've got Sadie Sandler, Sonny Sandler. I think Sonny and Sadie. We've got Judith Sandler. We've got Alexis Arquette. Let's see. Is that it? Who am I missing?
Dan Patrick. Did you mention Dan Patrick?
Dan Patrick. Yes, Dan Patrick, of course.
And Tim Herlihy.
Yeah, Tim Hurley, I think I said. So pretty solid.
Did you get Jonathan Loughran?
Is he in it?
He's the umpire in this. He's like in the baseball game.
Oh, wow.
Because he does that in that inside the park home run, and then he like hits home base, and he's like, "Sheriff."
Okay.
With his weird eyes.
I wonder if he's playing like Robichaud or whatever, his character from Waterboy and Grown Ups 2, Robido or whatever.
Bill Romanowski's in this too.
Is he in other single movies?
He's in The Longest Yard and he was in Jack and Jill.
That counts. Sandler Squad, Bill Romanowski. So that's the Sandler Squad. Then we have our product placement watch. So what I got is Hooters, Mr. Bubble, Bubble Baths, Dick's Sporting Goods, Seattle, Tampa's, the Palace Resort in Africa, South Africa, Adidas, I guess ESPN? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Yeah.
Coleman's Grill, or Coleman's just in general, like a cooler company. I think that might be it, unless anything's jumping out at you for
me. Do we see like an actual brand marking on the foot, on like the rubber foot stuff that she's using to stuff?
Dr. Scholl's.
Dr. Scholl's. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There you go.
Dr. Scholl's in there as well. Yeah.
And you get some very subtle Wilson in there around the baseball games, but I don't know if that even counts.
Sure. Yeah, that's a little bit incidental, but yeah, totally. And like we said, there's no slumming love interest. And so I believe that is it for our review of Blended. Great movie. I mean, a favorite for my family, certainly. It's become a staple. It's been a real pleasure talking about this one and revisiting it, especially in contrast to what we're heading into right now, which is just going to warn everybody out there in podcast land. One of them is maybe an edge case. I think The Cobbler is an edge case. I would consider these the two worst films that Adam Sandler has made, like bar none. There's basically, in my mind, no competition for worse, anything worse than this. The Cobbler is maybe a little bit, The Cobbler is just misguided in a way that I think it's like all the pieces were there and somehow none of it works. And you're just kind of like, this is baffling. What happened? Men, Women, and Children is an affront to God and man. it is honest to God, one of the worst films I have ever seen. I worked on it for a week. So I'll give you, I did not see Mr. Sandler. I was there setting up the production office because they filmed it in Austin, Texas. Not that you'd be able to tell from watching the movie, but if you know what Barton Creek Mall looks like, they're there a few times. But otherwise, it's just generic Anytown USA. So Jason Reitman's Men, Women, and Children is the next film in Adam Sandler's release calendar. So we will be discussing that next. We might have a guest if we can make it happen. I figured out what's going on with him during COVID times, but we did have a special guest who wanted to come on for that one specifically. We were saving it for him. So that should be fun. And then we'll talk about The Cobbler. And then we get Pixels. And then we embark on we close the book on Sandler's theatrical career. And we embark on his newfound Netflix glory with the detour of Uncut Gems and, to a lesser extent, Meyerowitz Stories, which played in some theaters. We're chugging along here. We're making good progress, and I think we're so excited to have all of you along for the ride with us. And hopefully you're all staying safe and enjoying some Sandler movies out there. Anything else from you guys?
No. I look forward to the ups and downs ahead. I've actually never seen Men, Women, and Children. I've heard a lot about it, sort of by reputation. In general, I'm a fan of Jason Reitman. In general,
we all were.
I mean that one will be interesting to see because I recall the film being miserable, but I also don't recall the amazing cast that's in it. Like I remember, there's cast that I knew at the time, and there's cast that has gotten bigger since, like Caitlin Dever and Timothy Chalamet and Ansel Elgort. So it's like,
and I mean, so not just Sandler, but like anyone who's gotten to know me knows that will eventually learn about my well-documented love for Jennifer Garner. So the fact that they're both in this movie that by all accounts is such a train wreck.
Judy Greer's in it.
Judy Greer is in it. So ever since we first started talking about this podcast, I know it's kind of become sort of like a dark joke with Wilson. It's like, oh Christ, one day we're going to have to do Men, Women, and Children. I'm like, oh yeah, that'll be fun. No, it won't, dude. So I've always had kind of like this morbid curiosity that I guess I will finally get to scratch that itch. So I am kind of excited, but we'll see. we'll see what we're getting into.
So in a few weeks, you'll either have in your podcast app, you'll either have a brand spanking new episode on Men, Women, and Children, or you'll have an episode on Pixels, and we will all have inexplicably pretended like these other two people exist. Normal times, it might have been doable. We'll see if we have the stamina in COVID times, but we'll together. I think we can make it happen.
You got it.
But yeah, so thank you so much as always for listening to us. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Tell your friends. Please, please, please stay safe out there. Stay indoors. Wear a mask. You know, protect yourself and those around you. And until we meet again. As always, I am Wilson Smith.
This is Chris Giles.
And Austin Culp.
And we will see you next time for Men, Women, and Children. Dun, dun, dun.